namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 19, Verse 14. Translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada.
Nirveda mulo dvija shaparupo. Yatra prasakto bhayamashut. Dhatte. Tasyaiva meghasya paravaresho. Vyasakta chittasya griheshva bhikshnam.
Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, the controller of both the transcendental and mundane worlds, has graciously overtaken me in the form of a brahmana's curse. Due to my being too much attached to family life, the Lord, in order to save me, has appeared before me in such a way that out of fear only I will detach myself from the world. Purport. Maharaj Parikshit, although born in a family of great devotees, the Pandavas, and although securely trained in transcendental attachment for the association of the Lord, still found the allurement of mundane family life so strong that he had to be detached by a plan of the Lord. Such direct action is taken up by the Lord in the case of a special devotee. Maharaj Parikshit could understand that this by the presence of the topmost transcendentalists in the universe. The Lord resides with his devotees, and therefore the presence of the greatest saints indicated the presence of the Lord. The king therefore welcomed the presence of the great rishis as a mark of favor of the Supreme Lord. Although in the purport Srila Prabhupada alludes to, or actually in the verse itself, Parikshit Maharaj mentions his attachment to mundane family life, we can understand from his statement here his exalted position. How many people caught in Hurricane Katrina said, "This is wonderful, this is the mercy of God upon me." Anyone? Will anyone know of any such cases? Of course, you probably aren't reading the newspapers or watching the news, as I am also not. It is a rhetorical question. Because atheists, by definition, don't believe in the mercy of God because they don't believe in God. And mundane theists, they think that God's duty is to make me happy in the material world. So mundane theism is not really theism at all, because they believe in God but they don't know who it is. It's just like you say, "Well, do you believe that the moon exists?" "Well, of course I do." "And what is the moon?" "The moon is the name of my dog, so the moon exists." But they don't know that what is the nature and characteristics of the moon. So, well, they have some idea, a supreme being, on some half-baked idea of him being a person. As long as you need something from him, he's a person, you pray to him. And as soon as you don't need anything, you convert him into an impersonal force. So it's not really theism. But actual theism is delineated in Srimad Bhagavatam. And we see the characteristics of great devotees. Even though the Supreme Lord is unlimitedly great, his greatness is magnified by the behavior of his devotees. That statement appears to be an impossible proposition, because something that is unlimited cannot be magnified. That is in a material sense, but in the spiritual sense, Anandam Buddhi Vardhanam, the ocean of bliss is ever increasing, even though it's already unlimited. So this cannot be understood by any mundane reasoning, because it's beyond mundane reasoning. That is the very nature of the spiritual. Achintya kalu ye bhava natangs tarkena yogi at prakritebhu parangyachta tadachintya selakshanam. The very nature of that which is inconceivable is that by its very definition cannot be measured or understood by the mundane mind, and therefore there's no use to bring mundane arguments into the attempt to understand the transcendental. The transcendental can be understood by His mercy, which Parikshit Maharaj is recognizing herein, and in this way, by His very behavior, by His activities, by His statements, Parikshit Maharaj is increasing or magnifying the glories of the Supreme Lord, just like a magnifying glass. The sun is already hot, not today in Chicago, but by nature the sun is hot, and on a hot day we feel the heat of the sun. But if we get a magnifying glass that captures the heat and increases it, so much so that on a hot day if you take a magnifying glass and hold it over a sheet of paper, hold it in the sun over a sheet of paper, then the paper may start to burn. So the sun is already hot, ashesha tejaha, unlimitedly powerful. But that heat is increased, the effect of that is increased by the magnifying glass. So in the same way, the great devotees, they magnify the glories of the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord is already unlimitedly great, but His greatness is demonstrated in this world by His devotees, by their attachment to Him, and by their exquisite character, by the spotless character by which they demonstrate what Lord Krishna repeatedly refers to in Bhagavad Gita as ananya bhakti, devotion without any other thought, only Krishna. Devotees only think of Krishna. They only think of themselves in relationship to Krishna. Even Parikshit Maharaj has his family. He's just given that up. Now he's forced to, he can see, now I have to give up my family, I have to give up my body. But he's not disturbed. He thinks this is the mercy of the Supreme Lord. And by saying so, he demonstrates what is the great attachment, loving, a detachment from this material world, and great attachment to Krishna that is the intrinsic characteristic of every pure devotee, intensely attached to Krishna. So much so that any bodily or worldly setbacks, they don't consider to be detrimental to them. They see, this is Krishna's mercy. Whatever happens, this is Krishna's mercy. I get $1,000,000, this is Krishna's mercy. Why does he think, a pure devotee thinks like that. Why does he think it's Krishna's mercy? Because now I can go to Las Vegas and have a party? No. Because with this, I can serve the Lord. I had so many desires to serve the Lord by dressing Him, by printing His books, by distributing prasadam. So the Lord has given me this facility to do so. Or if he has $1,000,000 and Krishna takes it all away, he thinks, this is Krishna's mercy. Because I was too much attached to that. Therefore Krishna took it away. I was attached to it for my sense gratification. I wasn't thinking how to fully engage it in His service. This, whatever happens, a pure devotee takes it as Krishna's mercy. At the same time, he is not negligent in worldly dealings. He doesn't drive his car down the road without looking, and then when he hits someone and kills them, he say, oh, it's Krishna's mercy. He's not a fool. He understands that it is my duty to attempt to serve Krishna to the best of my ability, and the result of that, that is in Krishna's hands. This is the real meaning of kamanevadikaraste mahaphaleshu kadachana. That everyone is entitled to work, but one should not be attached to the result of the work, means that everyone, not that one neither tries to produce any work, result, because work is meant for producing result, nor that when the result is produced that he is callous towards it, but rather that a devotee endeavors assiduously within this world and offers the result to Krishna, whatever it may be. Devotee goes out to distribute Krishna's books, and sometimes many books may go out, and he thinks this is Krishna's mercy. Sometimes hardly any goes out, and he thinks that's Krishna's mercy. But in any circumstance, tries his best to serve the Lord, understanding that he's simply dependent on the mercy of the Lord. So Parikshit Maharaj is herein demonstrating his exquisite personality by which many great rishis have been attracted to come to his presence. Parikshit Maharaj appeared to be like a worldly enjoyer, but all the rishis in the universe were mostly they're all very renounced persons. Even many rishis are married, but they are saintly persons. They're not enjoyers of this material world. Their family life is that husband and wife live together to perform austerities. So they're highly renounced people. Now they have come to see Parikshit Maharaj, understanding him that even though he is an emperor, he's just renounced, but he's been an emperor. He's been, from external vision, a highly attached person. They could understand that he is actually a very saintly person, and his actual internal detachment is being demonstrated here, that he's not in the slightest bit disturbed by having to give up immediately his kingdom, his wealth, his family, his servants, his retinue, but he accepts it completely as Krishna's mercy. This is the standard of renunciation, that one is able to give up everything immediately without being in the slightest bit disturbed. That means he never actually had any attachment for it. He felt, I am placed in this position by Krishna. I have a duty to perform in this position, in the service of Krishna. And when Krishna suddenly removed him from that position, he did not lament that now Krishna doesn't like me anymore, I don't believe in Krishna anymore. But rather he accepts this. This is also Krishna's mercy. Krishna gave me so many things to use in his service, so that was his mercy. And now Krishna has decided at that time that was best for me, that Krishna understood that, therefore he gave me all this. And now Krishna has given me this situation, and so Krishna understands what is best for me in all circumstances. This is a devotee's faith. So, marobi rakobi joichatoha nittadasa pratitua adhika, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, that you can kill me or protect me according to your wish, because I am simply your eternal servant, and you have the right to do that. He doesn't complain that I've been serving God for so many years and he put me into so many difficulties. What is this? What is the use of serving any God? No. He doesn't think of God as an order supplier. He doesn't think of him as someone carrying the fuel to throw into the fire of his unlimited fire of his desires for sense gratification. But he simply sees himself as the eternal servant of Krishna in all circumstances. So Maharaj Parikshit, by the grace of Krishna upon himself and upon ourselves and upon all subsequent generations of persons who have taken to Krishna consciousness, are taking to Krishna consciousness, and will take into Krishna consciousness. This Lord Krishna is demonstrating through the behavior of Maharaj Parikshit how to be a devotee fully surrendered to Krishna in all circumstances. And there are many instances in the Bhagavatam. Repeatedly in the Bhagavatam, we see the character of pure devotees demonstrated in various circumstances, generally in difficult circumstances. Difficulty is like the acid test, or then the character of a devotee is demonstrated. As long as there's no difficulty, it's easy to say Jai Radhe and everything's nice. But then when there's difficulty, then we will see who is actually attached to Krishna and who was attached to praising Krishna for the sake of acquiring sense gratification in the name of Krishna consciousness. So Parikshit Maharaj is demonstrating that his full attachment to Krishna and not the slightest bit of attachment to this material world, and at the same time the humility to consider that Krishna has arranged this curse of the Brahmana boy and the biting, the killing by the snake bird. Krishna has arranged this, Parikshit Maharaj is thinking, because of my material attachments. Krishna is so kindly removing them. We understand that a great devotee like Parikshit Maharaj, he has no material attachments because he's fully attached to Krishna. But there may be some, for the sake of demonstrating some point, there may be some semblance of apparent attachment to the material energy, which is engineered not by Krishna's external potency, but by his internal potency. Just as Arjuna appeared to be in illusion, so that the situation was created in which Lord Krishna could speak to him the transcendental knowledge of Bhagavad Gita for the benefit of human society forever. So in the same way, it might appear to Parikshit Maharaj that I am too much attached to family life. Therefore, Lord Krishna has kindly arranged to detach me from that. Although he may think like that, but we should understand that actually this is the arrangement of the Supreme Lord. We should never think that he's an attached person. And we shouldn't think, well, I know better than Parikshit Maharaj. He thinks he's attached, but I know he's not. But rather we should worship the position of Parikshit Maharaj, whereby he is such a confidential devotee that the Lord apparently places him in illusion to demonstrate the efficacy of Krishna consciousness. How by taking shelter of Krishna, one can, even in the midst of the most difficult circumstances, remain fully attached to Krishna and retain the humility by which a great devotee, even such a great devotee, that Lord Krishna personally appeared within the womb of his mother when the embryo form of Parikshit was attacked by the Brahmastra of Ashvatthama, that Lord Krishna personally appeared to protect him. So there's no doubt that he is a pure devotee of the very highest order. But nevertheless, he has such humility to think that I am materially attached. So we can also learn from this that Parikshit Maharaj appears to be materially attached. But what is our case? That even though we may be superficially practicing Krishna consciousness, but Do we have material attachments also? They may, the material attachments that we have, they may be more deep than we are even aware of. Recently in London, there was one man who attacked me with his talk. It means he was talking all nonsense, and I couldn't get away from him. He was following me around. And he was a pious Indian man, but he was talking, one thing in particular, he was talking as if he's a great devotee, but actually he has no idea of what is Krishna consciousness. And he was saying that, yes, soon I'm going to take sannyas. And I can understand this man's completely materially attached. And he has some kind of pious idea that I'll take sannyas. He's totally unfit for sannyas. I doubt if he could live more than half an hour away from his wife and family. They must be attached to him because they tolerated him for so many years, talking so much nonsense. So he's thinking that, yes, I'm going to take sannyas, but no idea. What does it mean to give up material attachments? Not such an easy thing that I'll be completely material attached all through my life. And then all of a sudden, just one day I'll wake up and say, oh, well, I think I'll take sannyas today. And it's not such an easy thing, because material attachment runs very, very deep in the heart. And what to speak of being attached to family, society, friendship, love, house. Even a sannyasi can be attached to a little water pot, or have some material attachment, or to copins, or something very insignificant. Generally, everyone is attached, very much attached to their house. As once Prabhupada was being shown a building which the devotees had just rented in Stockholm, in Sweden. They just rented it, and it was all kind of broken down, still hadn't cleaned it up, and they opened one door and a rat ran out. And Prabhupada said, this was the previous owner of the building. He's so much attached that he had to come back to the same building. But according to his karmic result, he could not come back as the owner of the building. He had to come back as a rat within that building. So material attachment is very strong. And not very easy to give up. It's easy to say, yes, I have no attachments. We can say. But to be actually so detached that in a moment we can give up all attachment to everything. Like Parikshit Maharaj. There was no prior notice. Just very suddenly. He was wandering in the forest, and then uncharacteristically he insulted a great sage, and all of a sudden he returned to his kingdom. All of a sudden he got the news, you have been cursed to die within 7 days. And there was no prior notice. Just all of a sudden, everything, his family, his position, his treasury, his horses, his elephants, his prestige, all of a sudden, phew, you're going to be wrenched out of that, and not even to stay in your body. So normally someone would become most disturbed and distressed. But Parikshit Maharaj took it as a blessing from Krishna, because he was always absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. So whatever happened, he thought, oh, Krishna, this is Krishna. Prabhupada told that he was in Calcutta during the Second World War. One time, he just sat down to take prasadam, his meal. And then the air raid siren went off. Japanese bombing Calcutta. And the bombs came down. Prabhupada gave it. Prabhupada imitated the noise. So his family members were calling, come, go to the air raid shelter. Prabhupada said, I'll take prasadam first. Prabhupada said, I saw these bombs, they're also Krishna in another form. And Rake Krishna Mare Ke, Mare Krishna Rake Ke. If Krishna wants to protect someone, no one can kill him. And if Krishna has decided this person must die, no one can protect him. So who will see the bombs as Krishna? Who will see Hurricane Katrina? This is Krishna. Who will see? A great devotee will see. Others will say, oh, so much suffering, so many innocent people. Often people ask, why do so many innocent children have to die? Because no one is innocent. Everyone gets swakarma phalabhukuman. Everyone has to suffer and enjoy the results of their reactions. There's no innocent child. They may appear to be innocent, but it simply means that that the result of their kaam, krodh, lobha, moha, their lust, greed, anger, envy, all these different bad qualities, their material attachments have not yet become very much manifest. But the very fact that we have a material body, that in itself is the proof that we are not innocent. We're all guilty. The childlike innocence is simply a precursor to material attachment. And actually, children also are very attached. I mean, if they become hungry, then they start screaming, serve me, serve me. It's very much material attached. But it appears that they are innocent. But no one is innocent. Everyone is carrying the results of their previous activities. Now, people, if we say this, people become very upset. In England a few years ago, the manager of the, this came as reported in Bank to Godhead magazine, the manager of the England soccer team, which is a highly prestigious position, it's like up on a level with the Queen or something like that, as long as the team's doing good. And if they don't do good, then they hate you. But anyway, highly prestigious position. Means everyone in the whole country knows his name and soccer coach. So he told that, well, he believes in the law of karma, that there's reincarnation and karma, which is pretty unusual for a soccer coach to say that. I mean, they're all, you know, big meat eaters generally and this kind of thing. So you wouldn't expect any kind of transcendental knowledge from them. So one journalist booked an interview with him and asked him, then, so you believe that persons who are spastics or physically challenged, as they're nowadays called, first of all they call them spastics and they call them physically handicapped, and now it's physically challenged, and when that also becomes a pejorative term, they'll make up some new, I don't know what they're going to make up next, they have vertically challenged. Isn't that stupid? If someone's short, they call them vertically challenged. Isn't that nonsense? Anyway, this reporter asked the England football manager, whose name I don't remember, and it doesn't matter anyway, that, do you believe that these physically handicapped people, they are like that because of something wrong they did in a previous life? He said yes. And that was the end of his career as the England football manager, because there was a great public outcry that they're innocent. They didn't do anything wrong. They were simply born like that. How can you say that it's their fault? And he had to resign in an outcry of protest. So people don't like to hear this. Everyone likes to think, I am good. And if anything wrong happens to me, it's someone else's fault. And if I can't find anyone to put the blame on, then it's God's fault. Jato dosh nanda gosh. Saying in Bengali, all the faults, it's all caused by God. Nanda gosh. So, it's all his fault. I'm good, but anything goes wrong, it's a blame it on him. If I do anything good, all the credit goes to me. If anything bad goes wrong, it's all God's fault. So, this is the mundane materialistic mentality, which mundane theists, so-called theists, actually there's no such thing as a mundane theist. Theists must be a transcendentalist, but they do not know what is the transcendental nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, when they say, we believe in God, the very statement, I believe in God, means you don't accept Him at all. Because if you think He's just an object of our belief, that He is subject to our belief, then we don't understand Him at all. To say, I believe in God, is practically a statement of atheism. Rather, we should say that I accept my subordination to Him, the ultimate personality. I believe in God. So what? Who are you? You think God believes, He depends on your belief on, today I believe in God and tomorrow I won't and then He will cease to exist. As if He's dependent upon us. They don't know, and they believe in God, they don't know who He is. So Srimad Bhagavatam demonstrates the behavior and mentality, unalloyed, ananya bhakti, unalloyed mentality of actual devotees, which is quite different from that of mundane theists. What to speak of atheists? The spotless mentality of a pure devotee in which he sees everything as the mercy of Krishna and at the same time endeavors fully to serve Krishna. This is being demonstrated here by Parikshit Maharaj, who we should all follow in the footsteps of. Who's ready for that? Who's ready? Someone comes and says, now I'm going to shoot you right now. You have 7 minutes. Or Parikshit Maharaj said, seven. You have 7 minutes. Who's ready? Who's ready to die now? Kirtan Nanda Maharaj, at that time, well, he still is of sorts, as some may say. He once asked this to devotees in New Vrindavan, who's ready to die now? Who's ready? So most of the devotees said, no, I'm not ready. Because for a devotee to be ready to die means ready. Antakale chamameva smaran mukva kalebram yakrayati sladvavam tyajyante. Tyajyante. What is the last line? Again, I forgot it. Yati nasti yata samshaya. That's it, you got it. So, one who remembers me at the time of death, Krishna says, he goes to me. And if we don't remember Krishna, then yang vapi smaran bhavam tyajyante. There we go. Tam tamavait evaiti kontaya sadata bhava bhavita. According to what we think of at the time of death, that kind of birth we get. So if you think of our dog, we become a dog. Don't keep pet dogs, it's dangerous. You can become someone else's pet dog, or maybe a street dog. Or if we think of my house, then we take birth again. Whatever we think of, if it's not Krishna, that we attain to. So are you ready to die? Most of us thought, no, I'm not ready. And one or two devotees thought, well, maybe. They were more confident. Then he said, I'm not ready to die because there's so much service that Prabhupada has given me. I have so much service to do. I'm not ready to go. I have to serve. Serve the mission of the Lord. And whether Krishna takes us to Him or not, that's actually a secondary consideration to a real pure devotee. He simply thinks it is my duty to serve the Lord. There's the a narration of one devotee. The Lord came to him and said, now I'll take you back to Vaikuntha. And he said, well, I'm in the middle of doing some service for my Guru Maharaj, so you'll have to wait. So he's thinking that. We are here for service. Not even the idea, I shall go to Vaikuntha, I shall be happy, I shall be free from all misery. He doesn't have any consideration. Simply thinks how to serve the Lord. That's a very high level, isn't it? Anyone thinks that I'm on that level? I'm Marobi Rakobi Joit Chotoha. Whatever. Oh Lord, you can kill me. Are we actually ready for that? Will we ever be ready for that? Seems such a high platform. The gopis are ready. Yes, take the dust from our feet. Put them on Krishna's hell. Then you'll go to hell forever. Okay, we'll go to hell forever. Are we ready for that? Such a high aspiration. Then what hope is there for us? Hope is there because Tatva Swadhamam Charanam Bhujam Hare Bhajam Pagva Tapatip Tato Yati Yatra Kva Vabhadram Abhud Amushakim Kovarta Apto Bhajitam Swadharmata. Great hope is always there on the path of Krishna Bhakti. There's no hope on any other path, any materialistic path. If we perform it very perfectly and very nicely, there's no gain. But if we endeavor in Krishna consciousness, and even we're not perfect, then whatever we do, that is for our eternal benefit. And Krishna is very merciful. We have very high aspiration. We can hardly imagine what it means to actually be a pure devotee. But Krishna is very merciful, and He helps His pure devotees. Just like He's helping Parikshit Maharaj, who is apparently materially attached. And Krishna arranged that he will have to die very soon. But Parikshit Maharaj had enough good intelligence that now I have to hear about Krishna. Now I have to do whatever is required to make my life perfect. So let us pray for Krishna's mercy. That is the active principle in devotional life. We have to endeavor, but we should understand that ultimately we cannot advance even slightly without the mercy of Krishna as received through the parampara system. Hare Krishna. Any question or comment about this, please?
Sometimes we are committing mistakes by our own will.
Sometimes we are committing mistakes by our own will. Yes. It's not really a mistake, is it then? Mistake gives the, if we say mistake, that gives the idea of something inadvertently or unwillingly done. But if we willingly do so, then that's called rascal. Now that is rascal. It's just like some people say, well, we're listening to Ras Leela, how Krishna is kissing the gopis, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to do that, so we should also do. And then you find in Bengal so many people, followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with Tilak and Kunti Maharaj, they're eating fish. And you say, well, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't do that. You say, well, that's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's Bhagavan. We're just ordinary living beings. So we should know what we are supposed to follow and what we should not try to imitate and follow. We should know what is anusaran, anukaran. Anusaran means to follow in the footsteps, and anukaran means to imitate. So if we say that, well, I didn't get up for Mangalati this morning because, you know, I was very sleepy, and it was Krishna wanted that. You know, Krishna doesn't want that, because he gives us through the parampara system all the rules and regulations of devotional life to follow. And there's no such regulation. Well, the regulation is there. One should rise early. So if we don't do, we can't say, well, Krishna wanted, because Krishna clearly says what he does want. Therefore we have Shastra. Tasmat Shastram Pramanam Te Karya Karya Vyavastito Gyatva Shastra Vidhanotam Karyam Karma Iharhasi Karma Kartam Iharhasi. One should know what is the regulation of Shastra and act accordingly. Not that, well, I went against the rule of Shastra, but Krishna wanted me to. And the rule of Shastra means that's what Krishna wants us to do. And if we say Krishna wanted me to do something else, then that's rascal, actually. Yeah. It's wonderful if we all make some progress in Krishna consciousness. It's not meant for entertainment. I enjoyed hearing it. Now I'll go out and go to the ice cream parlor and think about it more. Then?
My question actually stems from, for example, you said that, you know, no one's ready to really die after thinking, I have to do more service, professional, devotees. But then, and you use the example also, like, for example, if you're sitting in New Orleans and Hurricane Katrina is coming, you're thinking, how can this is Krishna coming? But so then, when we use our intelligence to say, well, everyone's telling me to leave, so I have to go take shelter.
Yeah, we should leave because we have the, if we're in the path of a hurricane and everyone is advising to leave, then in most circumstances we should think to leave so I can, this body will be protected so that I can go on using it in the service of Krishna. But actually, first of all, we should think about the deities, how they should be protected. There was a great test quite a few years ago now in Mayapur when one night some dacoits, bandits, I guess you could say in English, attacked the temple because apparently they thought the small deities, which are Ashtadhatu, were gold. So they wanted to steal them. And there was a great, they came throwing bombs, homemade bombs. And there was a great, then it was seen who came to defend the deities and who locked themselves up in their room and ran away. It was seen at that time. Even though there was no chance of defending actually. Bhakti Raghav Swami, maybe you've seen him, he was in Canada, he must have come here regularly at that time. So he only has one leg. Actually the one leg he had before was anyway useless because he couldn't walk properly. But that got blown off when he went into the temple to try to defend the deities. And someone else who was the manager of the project, who was a sannyasi at that time, we have heard, he wasn't that, he went inside the room and bolted it from inside. So then it was seen who was actually the devotee.
Follow up question. This is my question. Sometimes I'm driving with devotees in cars, and they're they don't have seatbelts. They say, well, Krishna wants to kill.
This is another nonsense. You don't put the seatbelt on because Krishna will protect me. So you go out in the driving rain and you go out without an umbrella. And Krishna will, Krishna's obliged to come and hold an umbrella over your head. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.